Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Well, boy, I'll tell you, the weather's been awfully nice. We had the crazy storms that rolled through yesterday, but today's been quite nice. I hope everybody's having a good Labor Day weekend. I know I was having one, and had a family party today, and kind of just relaxing and chilling out and enjoying time with the family. But, you know, we have the show to do here, and there's quite a bit. We didn't even get to everything last week. Thankfully, this week's been kind of a slow news week, or better, I've just been too busy with work to notice, which is entirely possible. But it seems to be one of the slower weeks in news. Of course, the main thing that's been going on is the big discussion over whether or not we should be going into Syria. And let me state plainly and clearly for everyone that I am dead set against going into Syria for pretty much any reason short of Syria launches an attack on us. There is a civil war going on in Syria. It's been going on. You could say that it was probably instigated by our people to begin with. From what I've been led to understand, it's the CIA and some of our government agencies that have been creating the instability in the Middle East, trying to shake things up a bit. The Arab Spring, that was, you know, interesting, the result. It's kind of funny to me we don't learn this lesson. The Middle East is a different society. The Middle East is a different mindset. It's a different type of, I don't even know how to even really describe it. It's just the people there are different than us. And that's okay. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying they're different. And the problem is that we keep trying to deal with these folks as if, oh, well, you know, we just need to push down our values on top of them, and then they'll be happy hunky-dory. And all these battles that have been going on throughout the Middle East for the last 3,000 years will suddenly be over, and life will be good. And somehow, despite the fact that, you know, we've had now almost a decade worth of experience, heavy experience in the Middle East and seen where that's got us, somehow we want to engage further and continue to meddle and to get ourselves wrapped up in situations that honestly don't concern us. And as much as I hate to see people, innocent people, getting killed as a result of the civil war that's going on in Syria, I also don't really think it's our responsibility to be involved in it, especially given that, based on what I'm hearing anyway, we have bad guys versus bad guys, and the civilian population's kind of caught in the middle. But quite honestly, there's not really a good side in the fight. And as I've pointed out to others, you know, when you want to stop the bloodshed, if you want to stop a war, the last thing you do is put more weapons into it. Well, the quickest way to end a war is to win it. That's the quickest way, something that we ourselves haven't figured out since World War II. But the humane way, if you will, that we could be involved in this situation is to offer to be a mediator between the sides, to offer to be a provide neutral ground where their leaders could come and talk, the leaders of each side of the fight. I think that's legit. I think that's okay. But if we decide to start arming one side or the other, especially given that I'm basically told that, like, as I said, both sides are the bad guys, I really don't see a good end to helping either side. In whichever case we're helping, the bad guys win. It's just a different set of bad guys. And that's something that Americans oftentimes have trouble understanding, is that in our mentality, we've been kind of groomed in that sports mentality of us versus them, good versus evil. And it's more complex than that. We have a much more complex situation. In almost every case, it's not black and white. There can be more than one bad guy. There can be more than one good guy. And in this serious situation, I don't think there are any good guys per se, at least not the ones fighting. But that's been kind of all the rage, you know, this week has been, you know, trying to get these countries. I've been watching what's going on in Australia and in Britain as well, because whenever the U.S. decides to go play in the Middle East, those are the two countries we tap first to see if they'll come play with us. And based on what I was seeing, both Britain and Australia have resoundingly said, no, we're not getting involved in that again. The public, and even the American public, is we're war weary. You know, we're tired of being at war. We're tired of its expansion. You know, a big reason that Obama won in 2008 was because people thought he was going to put an end to all of this. And while there are still many people who defend Obama by saying things either, well, you know, it could have been worse, which is a really stupid argument, or, well, you know, Bush started it, and you didn't complain about it when Bush was doing it. Well, I did, but they're saying that the right-wingers. Well, that's a stupid reason. Well, obviously, two wrongs make a right. That's what Mom always told me. We're to the point now where even the anti-war left is starting to come back, and that's good. No more apologies for the Democrats. No more apologies for Obama. No more excuse making. Things are right or they're wrong, and they are right or wrong. And yeah, there's different degrees of right and wrong. And there could be multiple rights and there can be multiple wrongs. But when it comes to going to war, spending our capital, spending our human capital, the lives of our soldiers, on something that doesn't involve our country is not only unnecessary, but I think it's immoral. I don't see how getting involved in other nations' business is any of our business. And the way to look at that is to turn it around. What if that was going on here? Would you really want a China being involved, taking sides in an internal struggle within the U.S., or a Russia? Would you want Russia taking sides? Heck, for that matter, would you want Canada or Mexico taking sides? I mean, it doesn't matter. It's internal business, and it's ugly. There's no doubt about it. It's ugly right now. We saw the sarin gas talk. And that was the reason why Obama said, well, you know, if there's a gas attack, that's when we're going to go in. That's the line. Well, come to find out that some leaked emails showed that the administration, not Obama himself, but the administration was okay if the rebels faked a gas attack as if Assad, the ruling powers, had done it against the population. So what you have here are rebels with chemical weapons who were getting the green light to use them and then blame it on the government. And that's insane that our government, that officials from our government, would be giving that quote. You can look it up. It's still out on Yahoo. It says, London, January 30th. Obama administration gave green signal to a chemical weapons attack plan in Syria that could be blamed on President Bashar al-Assad regime, and in turn for international military action in the devastated Syria that contained an email exchange between two senior officials at British-based contractor Britain Defense
it's not legit to trick the Americans or people in the other country to back something. They think it's a humanitarian mission for chemical weapons, but in reality, it's not. It's for trying to create these things to go in. And what we found this week with the chemical attack that apparently didn't happen, it's now being blamed.
I'm pretty sure, anyway. I'm pretty sure Yarmouth, actually, I don't know where Yarmouth will come down, but I'm hoping he'll be against it. The other four guys, though, haven't been real good on Liberty. And I'm hoping that with the pressure applied from the NSA ruling and the pressure applied, there were a couple of protests that happened this weekend, that happened yesterday in Lexington and Louisville. Hopefully, there's enough of a backlash that they, if consulted, if they get the chance to take that vote, they'll vote against it. Going in, that is. All right. Well, moving on, and I apologize, folks. I should have mentioned, if you want to call in tonight, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And the chat room is open if you'd like to play in there. I only check that during the break, but if you want to, it's there. It seems like every week we have some story on the NSA doing something stupid. Usually it's taking our rights away, and in a way, this is kind of that, but it's not really anything we should be too concerned about. The NSA is now upset that people are using their logo for parody shirts, and now they're trying to use the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, DMCA, to take down things that are making fun of the NSA by using their logo. They're claiming it's a copyright infringement of their logo. Well, here's the thing. First of all, government doesn't get copyright, doesn't get the copyright stuff like that. Private companies do. Individuals do. The enterprise side of our society, the public, or excuse me, the private side can. But the public side doesn't get to copyright their logos. And then on top of that, there's a long-standing precedent of parody being protected under the First Amendment. So when the NSA is called all kinds of bad names, right, they change what NSA stands for using the NSA logo. And I don't remember, I'm trying to look here, find this quickly, what they had done here. So they had one that said, the NSA, the only part of government that actually listens, which, dang, that's funny and kind of a burn. And there's been other shirts, too, that where they changed the meaning of NSA, whatever. The NSA is now trying to claim there's a copyright on their logo and that they have the right to prevent people from using it, which totally, completely bogus. I mean, you know, whatever. But that's the NSA update for the week. They've taken such a beating in the media, and deservedly so, and they just keep piling it on themselves and making it worse. Speaking of the media, you know, one of the funny things about the media these days is how bad it is. And I don't know if you folks around the state have seen your papers decline. The ones I've kind of followed, especially obviously living in Northern Kentucky, the Kentucky Inquirer, the quality has definitely declined in the reporting. And people are turning to alternative sources. And quite honestly, a lot of this is now turned back into straight-up yellow journalism. Now, for those that don't know, I'm not going to be able to give you the full history lesson, but let's just say yellow journalism is closer to a tabloid than a newspaper. And basically, people use print to push their agenda rather than to report on facts. And so on the Huffington Post, there was a commentary or a story put up about the Tea Party and the public libraries here in the state of Kentucky. This story was riddled with errors, both errors that were straight-up errors, like just things that were wrong, and then there were also intentional errors of omission where they tried to make things sound worse than they really were because they wanted the person to get that, right? They wanted that person to think that it was worse than it really was. So in particular here, this was about the libraries, and I think we've talked about this on this show before, that in the state of Kentucky, the library boards want the power to raise taxes the way that other taxing entities do. The difference being that other taxing entities are generally elected in some way by the public, whereas the library boards are appointed from Frankfurt and just with a check-off approval from the judge executive of the county. There's no election involved. And so KRS 173.790, if you would like to look up yourself, specifically outlines how a library can raise its taxes. In fact, KRS 173 outlines basically everything about libraries. Everything you ever wanted to know about a library in the state of Kentucky, except maybe a city library that might be hiding under KRS 65. But anything about county libraries and all that stuff is all hiding under KRS 173. And boy, I've operated way too much of that stuff. Very short version of the story is libraries don't have the power to raise their own taxes. They have to go back to the voters because they are not an elected board. But I think that makes sense. It's ironic that the people on the left, the ones who are usually champions of democracy, of the republic, they are the champions of a more democratic society. In this instance, want less democracy. Technically speaking, the way that the libraries are set up to raise taxes in the state of Kentucky is democracy. It's pure democracy at that. Depending on how they were set up, you either have to collect a petition of registered voters numbering no fewer than 51% of the number of people who voted in the last presidential election in the county. My God, I actually nailed it the first time. The point is that since approximately 50 to 60% of nation votes in any election of registered voters, and approximately 60% of the people are actually registered to vote, you're talking about 36% of the people of the county actually voted. And so 36% of the population is who you have to choose from. I'm sorry, that's who voted, 36%. You need 10% of those, so you're talking about 18% of the county needs to sign a petition. And once that happens, it's done. It's over. The tax increase just happens. That's method number one. That's if a library is formed by petition. Method number two is that they only need 100 signatures of registered voters in the county, and then it goes on the ballot at the next general election. Now, personally, as one who values the ideals of a republic, I like the idea of making the library board elected. It works for every other taxing entity. And the library howls and squeals, oh, my God, if we elected people to the library board, that would be crazy. It would become political. Well, when you're raising taxes, it's already become political. But school boards are elected. Fire boards are elected. Most of your taxing entity boards are already elected. If they have the power to tax, they're elected in some way. Some of these special taxing districts have some real wonky rules on how things get elected, but they're elected the same. And if the public were to get angry enough, they could do something about, you know, run against somebody. The library wants a government dream. They want the dream of every government bureaucrat, which is complete and total unaccountability to the voter and complete and total ability to raise taxes. And, of course, groups like the Tea Party, but also people who are just concerned about government in general, are very concerned about this. And so lawsuits have been filed, and in Pulaski County, the story talks about how Pulaski County, they tried to destroy the library. Well, yeah, that was half the story. Our state doesn't provide a means to switch between the libraries formed by petition and the library is formed by a ballot issue. And so in order to switch, you actually have to destroy one and build the other. It's stupid, and I wish they would fix that. And I'm personally trying to convince legislators to fix that problem, to put a mechanism in to say, okay, let's be able to switch without destroy and rebuild. Common sense. It was an oversight on the part of the General Assembly to not put a mechanism in for switching between. But the point being that if what they were trying to do was just change it, and they wanted better accountability to the voters for the library board. They weren't trying to destroy the library in Pulaski County. They were trying to switch how it was funded. That's all. They were trying to change how they get to raise taxes. That's it. In Campbell and Kenton County, they tried to work with the library board and tried to get them to say, look, you can't raise these taxes. And they tried to say, look, we're not trying to sue you, but if you raise taxes, if you try to do this, we will sue you. And the library told them, we can do whatever we want. And they tried to raise the taxes, and they got sued. And they lost. And now the libraries are boo-hooing. And, of course, in light of this ruling, these rulings, two more lawsuits have fired up in Anderson and Montgomery County. Same deal. I don't know any of the circumstances around Anderson County. I know nothing about Anderson County. But I know about Montgomery, Pulaski, Campbell, and Kenton counties. I know about all those. And I also know about the Boone County situation. Boone County is easy to fix. They were formed by petition. You need 100 signatures on the ballot. That's done. Easy. So the point is that there is a means. None of this is about destroying the library. But that's what the media is saying about it, that it's to destroy the library. And that's my problem with all this, is that the media is no longer can be necessarily trusted. You need to be able to read through the media. You need to be able to understand what's going on. And you need to re-verify and re-verify and re-verify your facts. You know, the Inquirer up here, he has done a great job outlining the position of the libraries. And they've done a great job of putting out the sob story that libraries are closed. They're the ones who've put out the FUD on that's a Tea Party lawsuit, which, by the way, yeah, some of the people on the lawsuit are Tea Partiers, but some of them aren't. Derp. Oops. And it's just disingenuous. It's totally disingenuous. And it destroys their credibility. But, you know, whatever. Man, it gets down to the bottom of the hour so quickly. All right, I'm going to take the break right now. When we get back, I've got a lot to cover. Texas is banning the sale of Tesla cars. New Zealand's banning software patents. The nannies are back. And how taxes kill charity. But, yeah, we're going to take a break now. Let's do that. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network, and we'll be back here in just a few minutes. Hang tight.
We So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to HuntsmanAutoGlass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Yeah, here we go. Sorry, folks, I had the dinosaur thing on mute. You can welcome back to Liberty Unbridled. This is the My View Matters Radio Network. We've got a lot to cover and not a lot of time. During the last segment, the chat room was invaded by guys from 4chan. They're doing something to do with Syria. I don't know what's going on, but I also we've already covered the Syria thing. There's not a whole lot else to say. We're moving on. One of the stories that came out here about a week and a half ago is that Texas is going to ban the sale of Tesla vehicles in their state. And the reason is that Tesla does a direct-to-market marketing scheme. They don't use the local dealerships or local franchising. They do direct-to-consumer sales. And so Texas and a number of other states are looking to ban the direct-to-consumer sales of vehicles. Basically, this is corporate cronyism. It is protectionism of the franchisee model. And the reality is that if Tesla wants to do something different, they should be allowed to do something different. In fact, Tesla is a different type of car company. Tesla has been pioneering and one of the folks in the forefront of electric vehicles for a number of years. They took some heat for taking a loan from Obama. I guess it was part of the TARP program, but they did pay all of that back, and unlike GM, they actually paid all of it back with interest, and they continue to do things. And I know our congressman here, Thomas Massey, drives a Tesla. They are beautiful-looking cars, and when it comes to torque, which is your takeoff power, there's nothing that beats an electric engine. So anyway, the point is that Texas is looking at banning this, not because Teslas are bad, not because Teslas are a pose of danger, but because it threatens the franchisee model of selling cars, which is absolutely terrible, completely and totally anti-free market. If Tesla wants to sell cars direct to consumer, they should be allowed to do so. Speaking of bans, New Zealand has banned software patents, which is kind of interesting. We talked about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act as part of what the NSA is trying to use to keep people from using their logo online. This is basically the opposite of DMCA, which is that you would not be allowed to patent software. And I think that that's a smart thing. The patents is always a very interesting and very complex conversation, especially in libertarian circles, because the libertarian left and libertarian right really branch apart at this issue over intellectual property. This is like the core issue that divides libertarian left and libertarian right. And it's a very interesting conversation, and quite honestly, it's one that I believe there's probably an intelligent middle ground that could help reunify those two factions, that that the intellectual property does have a role to play in society. And if I come up with something and expend the money to come up with the idea or the concept, that I should be able to recoup or even profit from that idea. But at the same time, you know, these 100-year copyrights and this kind of thing is absolutely ridiculous. And so there's going to be and I've talked to a number of people, libertarian left and libertarian right, about this issue. I just find it very, very interesting. And we'll have to – maybe we'll – if depending on what happens this coming week in the news, maybe we'll dedicate a show to talking all about that. Let's see here. This is one that drives me crazy. You know, we have talked on this about the nanny state. We've talked about the nanny state and controlling our actions, our choices, for quite some time. And I believe I've mentioned the book called Nudge from Cass Sunstein about how they want to micromanage our lives by basically removing all but two or three government-approved options. What the communists found was that if you take all options away and you only leave one option, then compliance immediately drops, satisfaction completely drops, people reject being told what to do. But if you give them two or three approved options, then they're like, oh, okay, well, we have options, it's all good, and they don't realize that maybe there were 10 legitimate options, and maybe, you know, two or three of them were really bad for you, maybe two or three of them were bad for the majority of people, maybe two or three of them were not any good for, you know, a small percentage, and then here's two or three that are good for everybody no matter what, but may not fulfill the need. You know, it's whatever, right? The idea is that government is limiting choices, but they're doing so in a way that it's sneaky, that people don't outright reject because they don't see that they're being told what to do. They don't see that they're being corralled. They don't see, they don't understand that their liberties are being taken away. And in fact, and we've talked about this on the show before, I know, it's one of the parenting techniques that's out there these days for parents, is to distract a child from bad behavior by giving them two other options to do. And while it can be effective, I find it completely disingenuous, and I have a huge problem with the government telling people what to do anyway. Free people should get to choose freely what they want to do and accept the consequences for their actions, period. And you know, that's just frustrating that, you know, they're taking examples from UK, not University of Kentucky, by the way, from Britain. And Britain's really big on this, too. When it comes to the nanny state, Britain is basically leading the charge, and we're following. They've got the street cameras everywhere. They've got, you know, all the surveillance stuff already going. The surveillance state is far more advanced in Britain than it is here. And so they're modeling and learning from the experiences of Britain on how to do things more effectively here. And by effectively, I mean effectively at taking your rights away without you noticing. And so it's important for you to understand that just because you have a choice or a couple of choices doesn't mean that you're being presented with all of your choices. And more important to that is that government should not be regulating adult choices. Adults should be regulating their own choices based on the consequences of those actions and free will to choose what they want to do, period. Anyway, moving forward here, there's been a debate going around. I've seen a little bit more of this because there was an article that came out about how Republicans are becoming more libertarian. And we've talked about this on the show in general, that it's not just Republicans, it's everyone. The Democrats are becoming more libertarian. More Democrats are coming back to civil liberties. The independents are becoming more libertarian because they cared about civil liberties and their wallets all along. They just were kind of squishy on some of the issues because they're the moderates. But as the government continues to directly negatively affect them, they become more libertarian. It's funny how that works. the more the government hurts you, the more you're not really happy with the government. And the more the government pushes you, the more you want to push back. Natural. So it's not a big surprise to me. I've been kind of following this trend for a time. But I guess the point is that we're all becoming more libertarian because we're all learning about what's going on. And as that trend has happened, and I can show you numbers, I can give you all kinds of data to back that up. If you don't believe me, trust me, it's happening. But one of the things that's happening now is those that are not libertarian are directly attacking libertarian in the soft underbelly. They're going after the hard drugs, despite the fact that we're winning the soft drug war. And they're going after how supposedly being libertarian is being heartless because we do not believe in government charity. And I can tell you, I personally believe that the phrase government charity is an oxymoron. Charity is supposed to be freely given. I, as an individual, see someone in need, and because I don't get anything out of it, but I think it's the right thing to do, I want to help someone. I give them something that helps them. That's charity. Expecting nothing in return, I help someone because I want to. That's charity. Government charity, quote unquote, is that the voters decide, or someone decides, that we're going to take from everybody and give it to some cause. And that sounds great. Oh, well, we're going to give it to the serving children of Somalia or whatever. Sounds great. Except that it's not charity. Because if you refuse to pay those taxes, that will come to your house and guns and force you to pay them or they will incarcerate you. If you refuse to be incarcerated, they will shoot you. They will try to forcibly incarcerate you. They will use force to collect, consider it charity because, hey, you're okay with where the money goes. But forcing other people to give is not charity. It's just wrong. And if the government's doing it rather than you, you're really abdicating your responsibility as a human being to do the right thing. And that these are human beings, I feel it's my responsibility to help people in need. And when I see someone in need, I do try to help them. I'm not saying I can cause people who are recovering alcoholics in this family. I can tell you that there are some people who need help that will not accept help. It's not really realizing help that they can get, which, by the way, is the drug war doesn't work. That's another story for another day. There's a very good story about how taxes killed our belief in helping others. It's very commonsensical. Something pretty simple. It's been 5, 10 years from now. I grew up Catholic, and I live in a very Catholic part of the state. And the Catholic Church decided that they were going to start closing down certain services and just let the government do it. At which point I kind of threw up my hands and said, well, then what good are you? Because, you know, I always thought that something to do, but Christ is to do, to help the need who were seeking help. If you read by taxes, we're being taken instead, and the government had programs to do these same things, though less efficiently, of course, because the government does not do anything efficiently. They had taken all the money, and there was no more discretionary income to give for the church to do those operations. And it makes sense. You know, at the end of the day, as much as you want to do charitable things and you want to help people, and there are always little things you can do to help people and should do to help people, when something requires a lot of help, big help, when you're talking hundreds of dollars, you're not going to be able to do that on your own unless you're comfortable. And when government is taking away your discretionary income, and by discretionary income, that's money you don't have to spend. It's the stuff generally considered things that make you feel good, right? It's things besides food and shelter and clothing. That's your non-discretionary income. Discretionary income is going to the movies, going out to dinner, whatever. If you don't have any discretionary income, if you have nothing to spare, then you have nothing to give. And as taxes go up and the cost of living has continued to go up because of our poor fiscal policies, we have less discretionary income to help people. And so that is what's killing our ability to help people. They claim libertarians would not, libertarian society wouldn't help people, but that's not true. There are people like myself that enjoy helping others. I like helping others. It's not a I'm better than you kind of thing. It's I did the right thing kind of thing. That's the feeling I get by helping others, is that I did the right thing, and I like doing the right thing. That's why I won't help Republicans or Democrats as parties, by the way, but that's another story again for another day. The point is that I like doing the right thing, and if I have the ability to do the right thing, I will do the right thing. Given the choice between doing the right thing and doing nothing, I will do the right thing. But only if that's a reasonable option. And I believe that if people were better suited to help others, they would help others more. And that is the ever-growing government that, in fact, is killing charity, not some sort of move of libertarianism, some wave of libertarianism that's killing charity. That's not what's killing charity. Not at all. Oh, I got 13 minutes left. There's so much to cover. All right, let's do this because I've been trying to get to this to 2 weeks. Marijuana. The state, the country, our attitudes on marijuana are shifting. For multiple reasons, all of which, in my opinion, are good. First of all, hemp, in the states like Kentucky that understand what the difference is between hemp and marijuana, hemp is already very popular. Here in the state of Kentucky, depending on which survey you read, we're somewhere between 65% and 70% of people in support of growing hemp in Kentucky. Medical marijuana is above 50% even in the state of Kentucky. We're above 50% support for medical marijuana. And even here in the state of Kentucky, the state of Kentucky is at 40% support for full decriminalization. And nationwide, we're now above 50% for full decriminalization. And that's kind of led to this ruling from the Obama administration that they are not going to pursue legal action against Colorado or Washington State, who have legalized and created a regulatory system for marijuana, full-blown, recreational, whatever you want to do, marijuana use, on top of the states that are already doing the medical marijuana thing. Now, medical marijuana has been getting a lot of positive press lately. I mean, a lot of positive press for medical marijuana lately. And that's a good thing, because based on what I've been able to determine in my own research, I believe that there are legitimate medicinal purposes for marijuana. Probably the best story is the one about the child who has seizures, lots and lots of seizures. They had tried to put him on different anti-seizure medicines. They had done everything they could. And seizures are dangerous. Seizures are debilitating. Seizures are not good. And so the parents had done everything they could. And this child started having seizures when he was 6 months old. I mean, just think about that. And if you have kids, and if you've had a six-month-old, I've got a nine-and-a-half-month-old right now, it's heart-wrenching to think about a kid having seizures at that age. I mean, they wouldn't even know what's going on. They've tried all kinds of stuff. What has worked is medical marijuana. And that led Chris Christie, who's taken a beating in the media lately, to say that we need to look at expanding medical marijuana to children. And, of course, he got beat up for that, too, because people don't – they're not using their brain. they're thinking this is all about kids getting high. And the reality is there is a legitimate medicinal use for marijuana. And I don't care that this is an anecdote. I don't care. Because every other situation out there, well, if it only saves one child, it's worth it. Well, why isn't that the same with this? And I guarantee you it's more than one child. There's a growing body of evidence about the use of marijuana, and specifically THC, to enhance opioids. Those are your heroin, not heroin, but your pills like Percocets and all that kind of stuff, the things that people get addicted to make it so that you can have a much lower dose of those pills and have the effect amplified by THC and marijuana without the addictive qualities. Well, that sounds great. Fewer people getting addicted to pills. You want to fight the heroin problem that we're having in Northern Kentucky and throughout the state? That's where you start. Because a lot of these people are getting addicted to the damn pills. That's where it starts. There are so many good reasons to really start exploring the field of medical marijuana, just based on the limited body of data that we have, that it's asinine and it's frustratingly asinine, because there are bureaucracies and territories and fiefdoms built around eradicating marijuana. And that is the reason why we don't go down that route. It has nothing to do with is it legit or not. It has to do with, well, we're burning down somebody's fiefdom. And in fact, when Obama came out and said that they weren't going to prosecute or go after Colorado and Washington, it was like the National Association of Sheriffs and all these other groups came out and went, well, this isn't fair, and you're going to cut into our budgets because we use this law, the drug enforcement budgets, to help keep cops on staff. Well, that's not what they were for anyway. And by the way, that is what happens. All the grant money that they get, they use it for lots of other things besides drug enforcement. And that's why they want to keep it. And the attitudes are just changing. Sanjay Gupta came out 3 weeks ago, or maybe four now. I mean, it's been a little while now, 3 weeks ago-ish, and has said, you know what, I came out originally against medical marijuana. Now I've done the research for myself rather than listening to what I've been told, and I'm changing my position. I'm for medical marijuana now. In Montana, they're having trouble finding juries to convict people for possession of marijuana, jury nullification. The marijuana issue is actually a beautiful liberty issue, because there's true medicinal benefit. You have Colorado and Washington doing state nullification, and now you have Montana doing jury nullification. I mean, if you're one of the super hardcore liberty people out there, this thing has got you just tingling at night with joy. And not because you're high, but because you've got state nullification, jury nullification, you've got true justification, right? You've actually got a popular item behind you in that there is legitimate medicinal use. You've got the undertones that the Libertarian Party and others have been saying for 40-something years that it isn't worth the money to keep fighting this fight, that it's just stupid to spend this money. And you've got shifting social attitudes. And I would almost say that in the next 10 years, it's going to happen. They're just going to say, we're done with this. And states, once the grant money's cut off, the states will stop enforcing it immediately, because the only reason they do is for the grant money. If you ever deal with government, you learn they chase grant money, dollars. It's what they do. They chase the money. They are addicted to OPM. Other people's money. And for Kentucky, the good news on this marijuana issue, Jamie Comer came out and said, with Obama's ruling, we are now ready to move forward with starting to license industrial hemp production in Kentucky. And it's going to be interesting to see what the state police, what the legislature does, if they're going to freak out or if they're going to let it happen. But I really do hope that they let it happen. Industrial hemp is going to help our economy. We've had guests on the show. We've talked about it ad nauseum. It's not the silver bullet. It doesn't solve all of our problems. but it helps. It helps. Give our farmers something to do besides grow hay. You've killed tobacco. Tobacco replaced hemp when hemp became illegal to begin with. So you've killed off hemp 80 years ago, 90 years ago, 80, something like that. You killed off tobacco in the last 10 to 20. If you want to save what's left of family farms, hemp is the way to do it. If you want to try to create some sort of manufacturing here in the state of Kentucky, hemp is the way to do it. I've talked to a lot of people this week about this ruling, and they are excited. People talking about starting up paper mills for hemp. People talking about starting up clothing, textiles production for hemp. This is a very, very exciting issue for Kentucky. And to think that this has been kicked out because of marijuana enforcement, which was never based on anything other than just silliness, authoritarian silliness to begin with. It's time. And if the feds try to screw with us on it, we do the same thing that Colorado and Washington did. We nullify. If they go and they attack the people in court, then we jury nullify. It's time. We the people do have the power, in this case especially, to educate the public, to nullify bad law, to put hemp back into Kentucky, to make it a viable crop, to revitalize our local economies and revitalize our family farms. We can do it. I agree with Comer. Let's start tomorrow. Well, he says December. Let's start tomorrow. Let's do it. Let's get it rolling. Sitting around talking about it isn't going to solve the problem. Doing solves the problem. Folks, we're out of time. This show goes so fast sometimes, it's amazing. Thanks to you for tuning in. If you're catching the podcast, tune in live, 7 p.m. Sunday nights. We enjoy phone calls when they come in. You can listen, of course, anytime. Folks, thanks for joining us. Tune in next week for another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm Ken Mohman on the My View Matters Radio Network.